From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Michelle Norris. Roy Orbison was one of the founding fathers of rock and roll.
Well, rock it in the morning, rock it in daylight, rockin' through the evening, and won't be home tonight.
Orbison could rock hard, but it was his distinctive baritone and melancholy songwriting that deeply influenced American pop and rock music. For our series, 50 Great Voices, NPR's Eric Westervelt has this appreciation.
Among rock and roll pioneers, Roy Orbison was different. Jerry Lee Lewis and Little Richard had that pound-the-piano self-confidence. Elvis had his sexy hip-shake swagger. Chuck Berry had one-of-a-kind guitar riffs to go with his trademark duck walk. But Orbison, with his thick corrective glasses, insurance salesman looks, and stiff stage presence, stood out. He and Buddy Holly shared what you might call geek chic, a unique style expressed in what Orbison sang about and how he sang it.
Only the lonely know the heartaches I've been through. Only the lonely know I cry and cry for you.
Orbison wasn't afraid to sing about fear, anxiety, loss, or insecurity. His song titles alone tell part of the story. Crying, Only the Lonely, Running Scared, and Crawling Back.
Those kinds of emotions and the intensity with which he expressed them certainly went against the grain of the kind of macho, confident, masculine display that characterized so much of mainstream rock and roll.
Orbison biographer Peter Lehman directs the Center for Film, Media, and Popular Culture at Arizona State University. Lehman argues that Orbison frequently utilized an almost masochistic stage persona in such songs as Crawling Back and many others, a persona that he says seems to embrace and almost revel in pain and loss.
That character brings upon himself, that he seems to almost long for. There's even a kind of public spectacle aspect to this pain and suffering, and the title, Crawling Back, even points to that.
Only you and no one else can keep me crawling. You know I can't help myself, and now I'm crawling back.
Orbison had a one-of-a-kind voice with a three-octave range plus occasional falsetto. Singer Katie Lang, who shared a Grammy with Orbison in 1987, says what made him such a moving singer was the juxtaposition of his strong, unique voice with a dark vision.
And yet this powerful, high-flowing voice, liquid voice came out of him. I think it was that contrast that really moved people. And he was such a gentle, gentle spirit that you felt like you could share your vulnerability in listening to him.
A candy-colored clown they call the Sandman tiptoes to my room every night, just to sprinkle stardust and to whisper, go to sleep, everything is all right. I close my eyes, then I drift away.
Orbison grew up in the small Texas oil town of Wink, a town he once described as dominated by football, oil fields, oil, grease, and sand. Orbison told the BBC in 1985 that he forged his guitar and singing styles by listening incessantly to West Texas radio stations that drifted into town. There was country, a little rockabilly, Tex-Mex, and Zydeco, but mostly country.
I listened to the radio all the time. That was the big thing when I was growing up. I learned all of the songs, and all of those influences probably just settled into one thing, and I'm the result of whatever that was.
I'm going back someday, come on me to Blue Bay, where you sleep all day and the catfish play on Blue Bay. All those fishing boats with their sails of rose, if I could only see.
Friends say Orbison's brooding song persona didn't match his real character. He was, they say, a fun and life-loving guy. The signature dark glasses were an accidental marketing tool. While on tour with the Beatles in 1963, he left his regular glasses on the tour plane. So that night, he had to wear his thick prescription sunglasses on stage.
Everyone was at the show and they took these pictures and they flashed around the world, and we became very popular after that. So I was stuck with the dark glasses. It was embarrassing at the time.
Orbison certainly wasn't afraid to express his pain if he got dumped or didn't get the girl. Yet even when he got the girl, there was no look-at-me boasting. There was still often a sense of longing, a hint of surprise, or even downheartedness mixed with triumph.
I always have to remind people that half of the songs, at least, are up songs or happy songs. Now, even when I sing a song like Running Scared, I get the girl, Pretty Woman, I get the girl, there still seems to be a melancholy quality to my voice.
I guess I'll go on home, it's late. There'll be tomorrow night, but wait, what do I see? Is she walking back to me?
Orbison's voice was largely ignored in the 1970s, but he came back with a vengeance in the 80s with several collaborations, including the all-star band The Traveling Wilburys.
I'm so tired of being lonely. I still have some love to give. Won't you show me that you really care?
Roy Orbison died of a heart attack in December 1988, just as a new generation was busy rediscovering and embracing his music and voice. The Wilburys had just won a Grammy, and Orbison had just been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He was only 52 years old. Eric Westervelt, NPR News.
Sweet dream, baby.
You can hear more of Roy Orbison singing, and you can guess the next voice in our series. That's at nprmusic.org.
Dream, baby, got me dreaming sweet dreams the whole day through. Dream, baby, got me dreaming sweet dreams nighttime too. I love you and I'm dreaming of you. That won't do. Dream, baby, make me stop my dreaming.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.